What in God's Name is on winter break. Shayna, I trust, is on her way back from Antarctica, where I imagine she made friends with the penguins. Today, we bring you a replay from a top show in 2021. This was recorded in February. Beloved community, as a response to the hyper-individualism of our culture. Shayna and I'll be back with you next week with a new show. Shayna.
Christopher.
I like how before the show starts, we can have these little conversations where nobody else is listening.
These little inane, mindless dribbles.
I have something serious, actually, to bring up with you.
Okay.
I was editing last week's show, and I came to the sign-off part, and I said, "Great to be with you, Shayna." And you said, "Good to be with you, Chris." And I'm wondering if there was a hidden message.
Tell me, please tell me you've been thinking about that all week. No, usually what I say is always great to be with you, Chris. So I trip over my words one week and here we are. Welcome to What in God's Name. He is Chris Owen.
She is Shayna Appel.
We are the podcast that seeks to explore current issues through the lenses of philosophy, psychology, theology, in an effort to get our listeners past the binaries of politics and economics, which takes up far too much space in the public square. That binary of politics and economics is both the breeding grounds for toxic individuality, and it also functions like blinders in that it makes us incapable of seeing that toxic individuality.
It also flattens out a view of the human being. And so as we use philosophy and theology to uncover current events and culture, we're also lifting up a fuller, more three-dimensional picture of what it means to be human. We are steering a passageway between the programmatic secularists who want to get religion out of anything having to do with our public and shared life together on the one hand, and then on the other hand, steering clear of the quasi-theocrats who want to impose their particular perspective and their particular theology on the public square. To the first group, we say, no, religion really does have gifts to offer us as we try to figure out how to be a healthy community, a healthy society. And to the others, we say, no, in a plural society, this amazing American experiment where there are many perspectives. We have a spinny wheel. It has 16 different core values and basic ideas that we cover. It's a way for us to freshen up the show. It's a way for us to welcome those of you who might be listening for the first time. We're glad that you can join us. And Shayna, my dear, I believe it is my turn to spin that thing.
I do think it is your turn to spin that thing. Chris, it landed on Chris. Which is going to be great because Chris has no idea what we're talking about tonight. Today is a different show because usually I'm the person who walks in here cold and has no idea what Chris is going to throw at me. But today is a different show.
The spinny wheel landed on Chris. One of the 16 pieces of the pie that the spinny wheel can land on is Chris. Another one is Shayna. It's an opportunity for us to say a little bit about ourselves. I come to this show not having grown up in a Christian household. I was raised by hippie parents, and I grew up thinking religion was really, really interesting, but that organized religion was really, really stupid. That changed when I went to college, where I met something I did not know existed, Shayna, and that was an intelligent Christian. I did not become a Christian at that time, but the possibility that, wow, smart people actually follow this religion, it opened up the world to me. And my life eventually led me to becoming not just a Christian, but a Christian minister, which is about the last thing I might have thought to become. And also, my background is in international relations and politics and government. So I combine both of those in making this show. I also love doing artistic things, so creating a show. It all brings together things that I love. So that's a little bit about me.
I love it when we can look through a rear view mirror on our life and say, you know what? It was all that I ended up here. It was just absolutely perfect. I have been uniquely prepared to do exactly this thing.
To spin a bicycle wheel that's mounted on a piece of plywood.
Exactly. To be a swamp Yankee living in New Hampshire, doing a podcast with my pal, Chris. So if you are a regular listener, then you know the last three shows, we've been talking about toxic individuality. Our good friend, my colleague, Margaret Beckman, got us off on that track, and it was a hot one. So we've been on a tear for a couple of weeks on toxic individuality, and I got to pick the topic for the show tonight and came up with beloved community. So in my congregation, we use a worship resource called Soul Matters, and I'm thankful to them for these readings. If you've been listening to the show for a while, then you've probably heard me say that the central purpose of religion is to answer the question, how shall we live together? Well, Mark Morrison Reed, who is a UU minister, very prolific, very poetic, actually put that almost to music. He writes, the central task of religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all. The religious community is essential. For alone, our vision is too narrow to see all that must be seen, and our strength too limited to do all that must be done. Together, our vision widens, and our strength is renewed. In light of all that, Chris, it occurs to me that faith communities have a unique role to play, not only in creating beloved community themselves, but in terms of teaching the world how to create beloved community. And even as I say that, I mean, I can see people rolling their eyes. I can hear people screaming, what are you talking about? Religion is what's screwed up with the world. All the wars were, you know, caused by religion. So I'm happy to have this challenged. But I have to say that I do feel that religion, that faith community is a particularly rich ground in which to grow the builders of beloved community. Yeah, so today we'll be exploring a little bit about what it means to be a people of beloved community and challenging whether or not that has to happen in the context of a faith community. What are your thoughts, Chris?
As I shared in our opener, I didn't grow up in churches, so if you'd have said this to me as a young man, I would again have thought, you're nuts. Look, how could that ever be? And so I come to this really as somebody who never expected to be involved in churches. And now that I am, and given what I see in the realms of politics and economics, which have become the center, the gravitational center of so much of our thinking and reflecting and socializing as a people, and I find them wholly, totally, completely wanting in terms of being able to develop community, let alone beloved community.
Right. The substance of anything I would want to be a part of.
Can I finish?
Yeah, go ahead.
Just finish that thought. So what I have learned about being in churches and what I love being and what I love about being part of a church is this. It's a school for the heart. And in particular, what I mean is, in general, I think human beings, so I'm backing away from church for a second, everyone suffers. The question will be, what do you do with your suffering, your pain, your brokenness? Sometimes the pain, suffering, and brokenness in a human life causes that person to shut down. People withdraw, get defensive, don't want to let anybody close. Totally understandable. Like, if you get hurt, why on earth would you open yourself up to the world again? That's one way to respond to the pain and suffering that come in a human life. The other way is, and I don't know how this works, the grace of God perhaps, I don't know, you tell me, to allow that pain and suffering to carve you out so that you become a deeper vessel, able to hold and be compassionate for other people. Church, when it's working at its best, it does other things too, but it's a humanizing place where people can be joined one to another through their shared suffering. The ability to be honest with oneself about one's pain, because that's doesn't always happen either. People are walking around in denial or unconsciousness. And then on the, not on the other hand, but in addition to that, being able then to hear others' stories of suffering.
It is so perfect and spot on. I mean, and I hear you speaking to something Parker Palmer talks about, the difference between hearts that shatter under stress and a heart that can be broken open. Heart that's broken open is now open to receive, right? But not all hearts do that in crisis. For the most part, I think most of us live in both camps. We have times when our hearts shatter and we get angry and we fall into despair, and other times when, for whatever reason, again, the grace of God, the presence of community, you just happen to have enough caffeine that morning, whatever, you know, you manage to just get on top of it and ride the disturbance a little bit. And I think the churchy thing for me is hope. You know, the churchy thing is that what we do, again, at our best, and, you know, those of us who work in churches know there's a lot of dysfunction in congregations, but at our best, what we do is we cultivate hope. Henry Nouwen, right, that great Catholic teacher and activist, once described beloved community as the place where the person you least want to live with always lives. And, you know, on its surface, great, I get it. So we're going to join a faith community and absolutely be guaranteed that, you know, the people who make us the most nuts are going to be there way ahead of us. And it's a good reminder, you know, it reminds us, right, we're not perfect, we shouldn't expect other people to be perfect, et cetera, et cetera. But besides the obvious calls to commitment, conflict resolution, and hard work, there's another call, and that is the call of hope that is woven into Nouwen's words. Because to stay in community with people, we've got to get beyond, we've got to hold hope that they can change and grow, right? And I think one of the most difficult issues confronting us right now is that, I mean, let's go to the binary for a moment. Let's say that the United States of America is divided right now, hard divide between the A side and the B side. And I don't think either side believes there is any chance in hell or on earth or in heaven above that the other side has the capacity to change. And so that's a hard place to be. And we can't be in beloved community. We can't create the beloved community absent the hope that others have the ability to change. But, and here's where it gets funny, Nouwen doesn't stop there. So right after that first sentence, he adds another. The whole quote reads, "Community is the place where the person you least want to live with always lives. That person is always in your community somewhere. In the eyes of others, you might be that person." Dun, dun, dun. There it is. You know,
I didn't know that came from Now and I often say to, not often, every now and then I preach something like, you know, that person who drives you crazy? You are that person for somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, people shy away from communities in general, but, you know, probably faith communities in particular, because they've been let down. But in reality, I have yet to meet the person who has never let anybody else down. So church is not the place where the holier than thou gather. I mean, this is like ancient Protestant throwback to the Puritans, right? Where only the elect, only the people who had convinced the elders that they were called and ascended and high above, you know, regular human beings, could actually be the church. Everyone else was the parish, right? And the parish had no hope. The parish was going to hell. That's why universalism caught fire. Universalism came along and said, we don't believe that a loving, compassionate, caring God would condemn God's children to hell. That was really good news for a whole lot of people. We are let down and we let others down. And that is a fact. It's a fact. I think the role of the church is to say, let's not let that fact eclipse hope. Or as we say in the 12-step programs, don't quit a minute before the miracle happens, you know, for you or for someone else that could potentially open up a doorway. I mean, stop and think about it for a minute. Based on where we are right now as a country, the hardest thing, I think, is that sense of hopelessness, that sense of we are so divided, we can't possibly bridge the divide. And here's where the liberal, right? The liberal, so we've been talking a lot about liberalism and conservatives. The liberal in me says, you know, what do we have to lose? Let's hope. Let's just let hope sprout, you know, a little green. Doesn't have to be a whole crop. Just, you know, just a whiff of green over the field. What does it cost us to let hope live?
So now I know a little bit of how it feels to be you in these shows. I did not expect you to go to hope. And it's really interesting. A brief rejoinder to your liberal notion of I'm going to hold on to hope. A conservative would say I'm going to hold on to hope too. I think the question then is, in what is the hope
grounded?
Yeah,
exactly.
So that's, and so let me just finish that thought.
The conservative, I want to know where you think the conservative puts their hope.
Yeah, and again, I'm talking the philosophical, the honorable philosophical tradition of conservatism, not the cheap,
capital
nasty
rioting
thing that we've got going on today that goes by the name of conservatism. Okay, just to be clear, the conservatism that I am attracted to and value would place the hope in God, not in the goodness of human beings.
Well, that's interesting because I consider myself a liberal. And while I think human beings have goodness, I don't think the goodness in human beings is enough. And this goes back again to what we were talking about last week, that if there is not something bigger than us that we will bind ourselves to, that we will commit ourselves to, then we fall into that. It's just too easy to have it be all about me.
Yeah, you are beyond the binary.
I am.
You're not completely liberal. You're not completely conservative.
You know, it's so true. My administrator asked me today if I miss preaching in the Christian church because I'm preaching it right now. I'm serving a Unitarian Universalist church. And I thought about it for a minute and I said, I do miss preaching in a Christian church. And when I'm in a Christian church, I miss preaching here. So, you know, it is that, I mean, I've been border crossing for, I think, my whole life. And
it's a gift. It's a gift you bring, Shana. It really is.
Maybe, I hope. It's not always the easiest thing in the world to live with. Sometimes my little Torian mind just wants to go, somebody tell me it is black or it's white. Just tell me, just Look, you know what? I am not even going to argue with me. Just tell me which way you want me to go. And then, you know, they tell you and you're like, well, yeah, but, yeah, okay.
Here's a thought, tying this back to toxic individualism a little bit. It takes a certain kind of individual to be able to participate in this kind of community. What I mean by that is that it's not easy, and it takes a particular kind of, I think, skill. I think there are learned skills that can be brought to bear that allow for an individual to be part of this kind of community.
And I think given the right environment, I mean, again, you know, having spent enough time in you know, 12-step rooms, I mean, I have seen some people come in who I was fairly convinced this was not going to work for them, you know. But we have this saying, don't quit a minute before the miracle happens. So, you know, we all dive in and we, you know, half fill the coffee cup because they're shaking so bad when they come in that if you gave them a full cup, it'd end up all over. I mean, absolute train wrecks. You know, and the other saying we have in the 12-step groups is be kind to the newcomer because they could be your sponsor in the future. You know, you just don't know. You just don't know until you come into a situation. And, you know, what is it? It's hope, right? It's hope. This is a program. There's all these people here. They're saying it works. My life is a train wreck. What do I have to lose? Let me hitch my wagon, you know, to that team of horses for a while and see where this goes. Got to have hope in something. And that can be enough to move you from, you know, being real carnage, you know, being real human carnage to being, I mean, really nothing short of resurrected. So, but it requires getting to your thing about, you know, it requires God. It requires tending. And so whether the tending is like directly God or God working through people, it requires something special.
And if I go to psychology, I'm thinking what needs to be cultivated in a person to be able to be in that kind of community is in part emotional intelligence. It's not the whole thing, but it's a piece of it. And it's certainly a piece that's missing in the, you know, if we think about the church being, or faith communities more broadly understood as being a place where, hey, maybe we can learn to be citizens again, where we can learn to be in community again, a piece of that would be emotional intelligence.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it requires not only hope that others can change, but it requires we have to have hope that we can change. And frankly, on my best days, I am more likely to believe that others have a higher capacity of changing than I have faith in my own capacity. But, you know, I give thanks to those communities that have held me, that they never gave up on me. And, you know, just, you know, put up with my BS and kept speaking to the God within until the God within showed up. And the God within doesn't show up every day. You know, there are days when I feel small and puny and I just want to lash out and be angry and stomp my feet and kick things around. But that's not, I mean, I may want to do that in the moment, but that's not who I want to be. But we're called to something more. We are called to figure out how to live together. Or as Mark Morrison Reed says, again, the central task of religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all. Not even just each to each to all, each to everything. I mean, stop and think about it for a minute. Like, I would join that church, right? Wouldn't you? And I mean, the thing we haven't gotten to today, but maybe our listeners will help us out with this, because I think there's grounds to challenge my presumption that religious communities, that faith communities are the place in which this happens. And I think there will come challenges. I can almost anticipate what some of them would be. Like, well, there's other places where people can learn to be good people. There's other places where people learn how to be team and how to work together. And I think all of that is true. But I think there is something specific to faith communities that has to do with cultivating hope so that we can have not only hope in others, but hope in ourselves. Hope is to the beloved community what oxygen is to life. It's a fundamental necessity.
I like it. Shall we leave it there? Let's leave it there. Be curious, Shana.
Go deep, Chris.
And shine light. This show is brought to you by our generous donors on Patreon. You can join them as a generous donor by going to patreon.com/ What in God's Name. You can find us on Facebook at What in God's. And also you can sign up to receive our newsletter at our website, whatingods.com, Shana, which is
WHATINGODS.
Great to see you.
Chris, it is always great to be with you.